0818-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Apparently, there are going to be 40,000. I know there's a Cork marathon on, but the women's mini marathon in Dublin is on this Sunday, beginning at 12:30, an event that's been going on for decades, a fun-filled, brilliant atmosphere, not just in the race, but in the city on the day. Up to 30,000 women will take part. Pauline Johnson. Pauline, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
How long have you been doing the women's mini marathon?
Over 30 years. I'll go back to one of the very first ones when we used to run up the total different direction down by James's Hospital. And over the years, I'd say we've done about 30 to 35 years of the women's mini marathon, because it's always been a great day out.
Yeah. And does it get harder or easier, Pauline?
It's because of the fun element of it. It doesn't, it does be fine generally. It does be great. Like, you wouldn't go back for more if you weren't enjoying it.
That's true. 35 years says it all. Who do you run it with?
I run it with my sisters.
Okay. The three of you?
The three of us. Well, there's usually four of us that run. Okay. Just one of them can't run this year. But
okay. And do you run it for, it's the same cause every year, or do you run it just for your own fun?
Mainly we run it for our own fun. Once or twice over the years we've done it for the Irish Kidney Association.
Well, brilliant charity, yeah.
Or for the homeless. But yeah, mainly we just run it for fun.
Okay, now, what's happened this year? Because I've been looking at their website and I can't find what you say, but you have discovered something. Go ahead, Pauline.
Yes, my two sisters received their numbers, and I received my number indeed a few weeks ago in the post. Yeah. You went on your page, your entry fee was €35, whatever it was, okay. And they said theirs was €38. And I said, oh, yeah, but you got your T-shirt posted out. Now, this was always an option in the past. You want to collect your T-shirt on the day. If you want to post it out, you pay an extra €4 or €5, whatever it was.
And the T-shirt says, I ran the Women's Mini Marathon.
The T-shirt says the Mini Marathon. It usually says the year on it.
The year, of course.
Like last year, even though it was 2 years, they had to give out the 40th anniversary one. But we're used to getting them at the end of the run. They hand them out with the goodie bags.
Yeah,
and generally, the amount of women that whip off their T-shirts and put on the fresh T-shirts.
Right.
And you see us all in the pub with the medals and the T-shirts on. And it's like, it's a, look, I've done this today again, another year done, and the photographs and the whole lot.
Done that war and have the T-shirt.
Exactly. Yeah. So I rang this morning anyway to the girl. Listen, I said, I didn't get my T-shirt. Maybe I should have ticked the box. I don't know. But I didn't get the T-shirt. Will I get it on the day?
Okay.
And she said, no, you won't get a T-shirt. And I said, why not? And she said, because we're only giving them out now for the first 10,000 finishers. And I said, or the first 10,000 entrants. And I said, I'm pretty sure I was one of the first 10,000 entrants because I enter it very early. Plus, I also know for a fact that I entered it before my sister.
Okay.
So I said, why did I not get a T-shirt? Yeah. And she said, oh, you didn't tick the box to say you wanted it. We had a thing on the website saying sustainability. And I said, I thought it was just the usual that's been going on for 30 years. If you want a T-shirt posted, that I didn't want that option. I wanted to collect it at the finish line.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to collect it at the finish line is because the last 2 years, if they look back on the weather, it was lashing, teeming rain.
Okay.
And by the time you walk down to Merrion Square to pick up your bag, you're soaked anyway from doing the run, so it's nice to have a dry T-shirt to put it on for the photographs when you're finished. Take off the wet one and wring it out and put on the dry one.
But pardon, is this a change this year? Did everyone always get a T-shirt?
Different. Always get a T-shirt at the end.
Because I'm looking at the VHI website for and they've been a great supporter of it for years. And then I think Flora did it before, and someone else. But they say adult option one, adult entry, postage of race number and T-shirt.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say the T-shirt is limited to basically one quarter of the entrance.
Well, exactly. That was my argument this morning. And I said to her, it wasn't advertised anywhere, not on radio, not on TV, not anywhere. Oh, yeah, she said, it was on our website when you signed up. And I said, well, I didn't look for my T-shirt when I signed up. You normally just sign up, you pay your money.
Yeah, you pay your 35.
I always want a T-shirt posted.
Yeah.
I said, so I don't think I've done anything wrong. I said, and even if I did, I'm still looking for my T-shirt.
Okay,
I've paid the money.
No.
€3 less than the people paid for their postage.
But you paid your 35
you won't
get
a t-shirt. Exactly. And I said, like, everybody else who's doing
and
this
say why
very disappointed.
Did they say why they've stopped giving out the t-shirts?
I said, why? And she said, it's for sustainability. And I said, pardon? Who made this decision? And I did say to the girl on the phone, listen, I don't want to be given out to you. You just happen to answer the phone to me.
Yeah, you're very good.
But
yeah.
I'm very unhappy about this. Can you put me on to someone who maybe would have made a decision or been part of the decision making in this? But she couldn't do that, which is fair enough. I understand. But then she
Did she explain what they meant by sustainability?
I'll tell you what she said, and this is what really annoyed me then.
Okay.
Yes, last year and the year before, there were so many T-shirts left over.
Okay.
You know, that it was a waste. And I said, well, I know if I'm running a race, I have 40,000 entrants, so I print out 40,000 T-shirts. I mean, you have to put in your size. So why do they accept my size T-shirt if they weren't giving me a T-shirt when I signed up, number one? But number two, it's always been, like, if you've 30,000 entrants, you need 30,000 T-shirts. That's the way it is.
But are they saying there was a T-shirt yellow mountain left
T-shirts left over, is what they're saying. So she said it's for sustainability. And I said, well, I don't believe it's for sustainability. I believe someone on a spreadsheet said we can save money here. Just give the first 10,000 entrants T-shirts, which is so unfair. There's women that hobble around that. Like, I run it, and I run it. Like, I should get back. As I said, I was one of the first 10,000 to sign up. So, like, you should get one. But so should the woman who hobbles it in 3 hours on her sore leg and her ulcerated leg, proving a point to herself and the world. She's entitled to a T-shirt too.
I thought clothes especially were very recyclable. They can be...
Well, it's not even about recyclable, Joe. Every T-shirt, I can show you my T-shirts for the mini marathon. I have a lot of them.
Because they are valuable. Because they are unique.
Being a runner, you need a lot of running T-shirts. And as well as that, you're going to wear them twice to three times a week when you're doing your training.
And you see, the initial reaction you'll get is, I'll give you my T-shirt. But that's not the answer, is it?
No, it's not the answer. The answer is, I want my T-shirt, what I've always got. What I signed up for is what I want, Joe. What I paid for is what I want. Like, if I go into a shop and say, I pay you now for a bottle of milk. Oh, sorry, but only the first 100 customers got the milk, you know, that they paid for.
But we take your money anyway.
Yeah, no, that's not good enough, I'm sorry.
The fact that it is a charitable event, primarily good-natured, are you nitpicking?
I don't think so. I definitely do not think so. And if you ask any woman who finishes it...
Of course.
And
Pauline, could you have said in the original entry form, could you have said, I don't want a T-shirt?
I definitely did not say, I do not want a T-shirt.
No, but 100%. Could one have said... If somebody did say, I know I don't want a T-shirt,
I wasn't aware of that. No, I don't. I've never seen an option for to say, you know, if you don't want a T-shirt. Because, as I say, it's always been done. If you want a T-shirt posted out, you pay extra.
Okay, well, the reaction so far of the organisers is, if you want a T-shirt, we'll give you a T-shirt.
But when I rang up today, that wasn't the reaction. When I rang up today, I was told point blank. I said, can I go to a shop? Because I know that they...
But that's not your point either. Your point is, why is only a relatively small percentage of the participants getting the T-shirt? The unique T-shirt, to the 40th anniversary of the event, which is this weekend.
Well, the 40th anniversary was actually... We got those T-shirts last year. Oh,
okay.
So this is actually the 44th year.
Oh, thank God you're on the ball. You're on the ball.
I think it's
the 40th year. VHI, I have to read these things really carefully.
There was 2 years we'd done it virtually, Joe.
Ah, of course, yeah.
You see. So 40th year of it running on the
street. Did you do it during COVID, yeah?
You did, yeah.
Oh, well done. Well done.
And paid for the T-shirt and got the T-shirt.
Okay, well, what about water bottles in terms of sustainability? Did they say the only place we can get the T-shirts made are in Bangladesh or Pakistan and we're not happy with the the factories over there or whatever.
No, not a word about it. And if I had have even been on the radio, like, there's no T-shirts this year, there's no whatever, that would have been fine if I'd have known what I was buying.
You still would have participated, but you would have known.
I possibly would have. Yeah. I possibly would have. But I just don't like the manner in which it's done. And I just don't see any reason for it. Why was it not advertised? Like, why did they not advertise the fact that they're being so sustainable? The BHI have made this decision. Okay.
And you say there's a great atmosphere. Is there a sing-song as you're running along? Is there?
Well, that's another thing. All over the years, as I said, from 87, we would be running it. From a young girl, and we'd be all on the front line. And they always started off with Molly Malone. Always. Yeah. That was always the song just before the run. There'd be a few sing songs and exercises, but that was always a song before the whistle went. And it would go from the top line right to the back. And it's an amazing, terrific atmosphere.
Okay. Pat,
and
you're listening.
The past few years, they haven't been singing that. We've had to do it ourselves on the start line.
Okay. I just think it's fantastic you've been doing it for most of the 42 years it's been on. Pat, your point, please. Joe at rt.ie 51551. You're listening to Pauline Johnson. Go ahead, Pat.
Well, fair play to you, Pauline, for doing the marathon first, but I think we've gone beyond giving out free T-shirts with every event, and I think maybe we should all grow up a bit. If we want a T-shirt, maybe buy it and cut down on the amount of T-shirts in the backs of people's wardrobes that end up just going to landfill, effectively. So, yeah, get the T-shirt, but pay the 5 or 6 euros for it. That's my point, really.
Okay, do you want to reply, Pauline?
Yeah, I would like to reply. Pat, maybe your T-shirt stays in the back of the wardrobe, but if you were listening to me, I'm telling you, I run 3 times a week. It's not a waste, that T-shirt. It's not wasted. It's on my back. But and as a runner, I go through a lot of T-shirts. I'm running 3 times a week. I'm using at least minimum of 6 T-shirts.
Yeah, that's fine. But I mean, why
and
not?
And I thought I was actually buying a T-shirt.
But Pat's saying you're not paying for it, Pauline.
Well, I thought it was incorporated in the price like it has been for the past forever.
Because
the entry,
because the entry fee this year is how much?
It's €35.
Yeah. Is that not, is that not the price of a T-shirt included there, Pat?
Yeah, fair point, but maybe that's the way forward. I mean, have a rate for doing the marathon, and then if you want a T-shirt, pay the extra €6 or €7 or what it is.
And you know, Pat, that does happen with a lot of runs. That is an option for a lot of runs. You can decide if you want to buy a T-shirt or not, and that's for a lot of runs.
Yeah, and maybe the marathon, that's what they do going
but
forward.
But once you know that's what you're buying, that's fair enough.
But at one stage, Pat, did you not say to Pauline you think we should all grow up?
Yeah, well, definitely.
Why do you think Pauline's been juvenile then?
Well, I'm not accusing Pauline of not growing up. I mean, obviously she's a good runner and fair play to her for doing the marathon. But I think just countrywide, I mean, any event you go to now, there's T-shirts given out and goodie bags. And I think, like for adults, I think, look, the world is on fire, effectively. And we're here thinking about, you know, the next T-shirt with a stamp on it. That,
Pat, can I ask you a question? Can I ask, do you do running?
Oh, I do a bit, Pauline,
You do? Do you drive a car?
I do, of course, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you see, I would say I do a lot more leg walk and running, and if you're worried about the environment, I do my bit for that. I do a lot of walk, and I do a lot of running, I do a lot of cycling, so I do perfectly, so... You know, don't bring that into it, because that's not what the issue is.
No, it's not an individual thing. I'm not accusing you of it. I'm talking about the organisers of these events that maybe, as you agreed, the policy should change going forward. That's,
and when you say once they make people aware of it.
And Pat, what's your point in saying to Pauline the world is on fire?
Well, I'm not saying it to Pauline in particular, but we all know that it is. I mean, global warming has gone up so much, and the amount of stuff going to landfill really is okay. Stuff is recyclable, but it still has to be produced, which costs a lot of money. That's all. You know.
Okay. Pat, you prompted me to ask the next question. Pauline, what's in the goodie bag?
What's in the goodie bag? There'll be crisps. There might be crisps and a bottle of water.
Okay.
Maybe a bottle of orange. Maybe a tablet detergent. Years ago, we used to get fantastic goodie bags, and I'm not giving out about the goodie bags. Like, what you get is what you get, but we always got
But Pat, I've never heard, of all the stuff I've read, especially in the last few years, and all the stuff I've learned or read about sustainability, T-shirts were never up there as the number one culprit.
Well, I suppose...
Cars, planes...
Yeah, there's no individual thing, I suppose. The total of everything, if we can make an easy... I mean, it's low-hanging fruit, really. It's a T-shirt that most people don't need. Pauline obviously wants it, and that's fine. There's
yeah,
no
but
no,
in fairness, don't you not, you not see your point? That she's been, we won't labour this, we'll finish this. But she's been doing the marathon since she was... I'm trying to work out here, Pauline. Check me now if I'm wrong. But I suspect Pauline might be in her early 50s. Pauline, talk to Joe.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, God, that was close. My nerves are gone here. Pauline's in her early 50s. She's been doing the race since she was in her teens. She has a T-shirt for every year. It's memorabilia. It's a reminder. It's a, and it has a function as well, Pat.
And Joe, can I just add to that?
Yes.
Each T-shirt that you wear, like the 40th year one last year, there's people who run and they're very ill. And that's the T-shirt I got the year that I didn't think I could do that run. The T-shirt is not just for the sake of the T-shirt.
Okay.
You know, there's people who run and say, oh, that was the year I never thought I'd run again.
That's a very
That was the year
point.
I got back running.
Yeah.
That's what they represent, not just the T-shirt.
Or that's the year the person I was running for unfortunately passed away.
Exactly. There's so many reasons for those T-shirts. It's not just a T-shirt. And as I said, if this had been publicised earlier, there would be no issue about it.
I think you've converted Pat. Has Pauline converted Pat?
Well, hopefully there's a meeting of minds. I think, you know, I think if there's a charge, be it nominal, you know.
Yeah, but there is. But Pauline's saying there is a built-in charge in the 35 quid.
Well,
you know, and then you pay for the postage for wherever it's to be posted.
Yeah,
but anyway, we're like the women's mini marathon. We're going around in circles at this stage. But Pauline, I take your point. And
there's a good website to show the charge. People could tick the box
okay,
or not.
Okay.
And they're taking responsibility for what they buy.
Okay, know? life's rich tapestry. Okay, Pauline, best of luck. Enjoy. And above all, good health to the three amigos, the three sisters.
Thank you so much.
And have good. Would you wear anything distinctive now, Pauline? A wig or a colourful?
No.
Oh, God, flag
no.
Or fly a kite or?
Okay. That's all I could do to wear my vest and shorts, Joe.
Well, off you go. It's a fantastic achievement. 35 years doing the marathon every year. Okay, the mini marathon. Pauline Johnson and Pat, go to Mila Mark, Joe at RT.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe at RT.ie. Larry Carty has contacted us, as Jerry O'Boyle has. Larry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Please acquaint our listeners, and indeed remind some of them, but acquaint most of them, with the short life and the heroism of Private Billy Keegan.
Well, Joe, Billy Keegan was a young soldier from Ballyhonus in County Mayo.
Okay.
And he'd always aspired to join the army.
Right.
And he eventually joined in 1997 the 1st Infantry Battalion in Galway.
Yeah.
And he went to Lebanon on the 82nd Battalion, and that's where I met him first.
Okay.
Now, I'd known Billy, and I'd known his family. I knew Mary, his sister, and she told me he was joining the army and to look out for him.
Okay.
So when Billy arrived to Lebanon, I gave him his orientation of Lebanon because I was with the 81st about to rotate home. So roll on a few years, and 1999, I spent a full year in Lebanon, and the second part of the year, Billy came out, and I served with Billy on the 85th Battalion. And we were only 6 weeks into the trip when Billy was tragically killed.
Yeah.
On the 31st of May, 1999. Today is actually his 24th anniversary.
Yeah.
And
God rest.
Billy was an outstanding soldier. And the night before, he rang me. I was off post. I was due to travel to UNIFIL headquarters as convoy commander. And he told me that he'd been promoted in the field to acting corporal unpaid.
Okay.
And he wanted to know, would I have stripes for him? I said, of course I have. I'll give them to you when I get back up.
The stripes?
The follow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's two stripes. He was
brilliant.
Getting acting corporal.
Brilliant.
And that's a junior leader in the Defence Forces. Now, it was unpaid, but it would have brought him on in his career. Yeah. Billy Keegan, and everyone will tell you, was going places.
Okay.
He was going up the ranks. So, on the morning of the 31st of May 1999, around 5 o'clock in the morning, I was about a kilometre away, and I could hear the shooting in the distance. It woke me up, and I didn't know what was going on.
Okay.
And we just turned on the radios that we had to see what was coming over the net, to see what was happening. And there was a firefight going on in Brashit village. Mm-hmm. And UN Post 642, which Billy was on, was coming under direct fire. And then two mortars were fired. One impacted outside the post. The second mortar impacted inside the post, fatally killing Billy. Mm. But the background to all this, which I didn't know at the time, because when I found out it was Billy that was killed, I just heard it coming over the radio net, bunker number such and such is down fatally, and other bunker numbers came in as injured. So I knew it was Billy when I seen the bunker number, because I had a list of the bunker numbers in front of me to see who had been hit. The background to it is, that morning, when the post came under fire, Billy was not on duty.
Okay.
He woke up, went up to the post where the platoon officer and platoon sergeant and the NCO, or the corporal on duty were, reporting back what was going on. And Billy asked, "What can I do?"
Yeah.
And the post commander said, "Get them into Groundhog," which is our code for into the bunkers.
Yeah.
So Billy got up and got 14 guys out of their beds and into the bunkers. And as he was going in with the last two, the fatal round impacted.
Oh my
he
God.
Was the last man travelling in, and it killed him instantly. He could have been in the bunker first. But no, he went above and beyond, put his own life on the line, and cared for his comrades to get them to safety. And he
got everyone up in the early hours of the morning and said everyone to take cover, get into the bunker quickly.
Yeah, the two mortars landed at 4 minutes past five. He got them into safety. He saved the lives of 14 guys that morning.
And as you say, he didn't have a commanding role that morning. He could have said, "Follow me into the bunker." But no, he said, "Quick, lads, get in," and pushing people in. And
he made sure they were all in. Barred the three. One was fatally injured, or he was fatally injured. Another one of the guys, I don't want to mention names, seriously injured.
Yeah.
And a third one, who did not know he was injured and was administering first aid to both Billy and the seriously injured guy, administered first aid afterwards, disregarding his own wounds, until the post commander and platoon sergeant came down and the platoon driver took over and helped all three, all while under fire. They were still under fire while all this was going on.
Incredible.
And you know, they're heroes.
So you've started a campaign. What is the, and it is a labour of love, but what is the campaign, Larry?
Right. What we're trying to do, we're over phase one. We met with Mayo County Council, Councillor Seamus Weir, the Cahir looked, got us into a meeting in Castlebar 2 weeks ago, where we got a memorial approved and over the line, which is going to be unveiled next year on the 25th anniversary, and a bridge named after Billy. That was phase one.
Okay.
The second part of our campaign is to get him recognised officially by the government. Mm. I was a signatory on a citation for Billy in 2018 to have him awarded the Medal of Gallantry.
Okay.
And it didn't go through. It was knocked down under the Defence Force Regulation A9, the new series, which was came into operation in December 2001, and Part 3, Section 1 states there's a time frame that it has to be in within 2 years of the act of bravery. Now, Joe, we came back from Lebanon that time in total shock. No one knew what was going on. Others were expecting others to put in.
Of course.
At the end of the day, it should have fallen into the lap of the battalion commander, but that never happened. So we watched with great interest what was going on with Jadaville, you know, because that was another historical incident, and they were getting knocked back. And we decided to put pen to paper for Billy in 2018. and it was turned down, as was Jadaville's. We are the worst country in the world recognising the honours of our own. I spoke with a senior US military officer and told him this story.
Yeah.
And he asked me, was there any US service personnel serving in the area at the time? There wasn't. And I said, why did you ask that? Because I would have got him a medal. I would have had him honoured by the US military if he was serving in an area that US military were serving in.
Okay, and Larry,
our own government.
Yeah, say with us, Larry. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text. Jerry O'Boyle. Jerry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were Billy Keegan's best friend at school. What was he like?
Look at Billy, as it was, we started school the same day together, we're neighbours. Look, as everyone that knew Billy in Ballyhonis National School and Ballyhonis Secondary School, everyone knew that Billy's goal was to join the army, because Billy was, he, you know, as what youngsters would do, like, you know, playing or whatever it was, like a new Billy, so 5 years of age. Billy was always, you know, had to play the role with army with Billy, and the army was Billy's goal. And, you know, he never really had much interest in school as such.
Okay.
You know, everyone, you know, I knew army's where Billy was going to go. And in fairness, you know, he finished secondary school in Ballyhonis, and, you know, he went to work in the local factory, and within a couple of months, Billy applied for the army, and lo and behold, Billy got the army, you know. And he was over the moon. And you know, and everyone that knew Billy was delighted for him. You know, he got his goal, you know what I mean? We all went off any different ego trips, and, you know, but Billy's ego was to be in the army, and he did get it, and he did succeed. And, you know, he did his first trip out in the Lebanons, and, you know, he was pretty excited about it. And
just remind people how young he was, Jerry, when he signed up.
He was about 19 years of age there when he signed up, you know. He was only a young soldier. He was only out of school, you know.
And what age was he when he was killed then? 24, 25?
He was 21, just going on 22 that day. He was killed, unfortunately, 24 years today. He was killed, and he would have been 22 that following July. So he
that's
was
incredible.
21 hitting 22, you know.
Well, that's incredible courage, such a young man.
We all remember the dark cloud that came over the small little town of Ballyhonis when Billy was killed. You know, the word came out that morning, you know. And in fairness, you know, the town, the county came to a standstill on the 5th of June when he got his full state funeral, you know. And, you know, there was a sign of proudness. You know, he died for a country, but, you know, he did get the full military honours, and, you know, the town did come to a standstill. And what I'm like, this is what I'm on here today, Joe, you know, as Larry, and I'm kind of going back to what I'm saying, Billy was never recognised. He was never recognised for his bravery. There could have been 14 fatalities that morning, you know, but Billy put his neck on the line, and that's the type of lad, you know. He was very kind, he was good-hearted, he always put everybody first, you know. You know, he came there from, you know, he had two sisters, his mom and dad knew them very well, you know. He always put his sisters first, he always put his friends first, you know. Billy, that was the type of guy he was. And, you know, as Larry told us, as you know, we learned an awful, you know, when Billy died, we're all 21 years of age, we're all young, you know. It all happened, so, you know, we didn't realise what had happened till it was over, you know. And, you know, as we get older, you know, I mean, I'm in my 40s now, Billy will be coming 46 this July, you know. You know, we said, right, we have to do something, we have to recognise him. We thought, you know, the Defence Force of the government to recognise him. He never was recognised. So, like, in fairness, you know, we got on to, you know, those local county councillor Seamus Weir, who's the Cahirla. There was local councillor Richard Finn, who's in Clamaris the next time over. And then there's local county councillor John Cribben. And in fairness, they did put all stops on. We did get him recognised in the Mayo County Council as a monthly meeting.
It's our national army. That I'm just reading the report of the funeral. 24 years ago this week, June the 7th, 1999. And it's written by Miriam Lord. She was actually writing for the Irish Independent at the time, and thankfully she's still going strong now with the Irish Times. And as with Miriam, it's a beautifully crafted piece. And very, very sensitive. But I read out some of it if I can, just to give people listening how important Billy Keegan was, not just in the life of Ballyhaunas, but in, and his family, of course, but in the life of the country as well. The military trappings, the ceremony befitting a returning hero, distracted thoughts from the grim reality of Billy's death. But when the band and the lines of soldiers marched by and the tricolour draped coffin passed alongside, you could see the shock on the faces of those same young people. You could see it too in the expressions of many soldiers in the escort, pale-faced youths who looked far too young to be expected to fight for their country. His grieving family followed behind the gun carriage on which rested a single wreath. It came from the army, and it was made from green, white and orange, flowers entwined with tricoloured ribbons. At the ceremony, Billy and Doris Keegan and their daughters Mary and Anne clung to each other for comfort and support, watching the interment from behind the ramrod backs of Billy's army comrades. Before the coffin was lowered, the bearer party removed two flags, Billy's beret and a pair of gloves. As the ranking officers drifted away, Billy's army's friends moved a large wreath graveside. It spelled out Buddy in red carnations. Such an impressive funeral for Private William Keegan, Billy, 22 years old, only brother and only son. Now, that gives a sense, I think, better than any of I could, of the respect that Billy was held in his native town of Ballyhaunas. Larry, what, like, this army, the army say it's 2 years, but like, even reading Miriam Lord's picture of the grief that family were going through, it was grief. I know grief over the years, it's a wound that will heal, it'll get smaller, but will never disappear. But like, to expect people to start campaigning within 2 years when they're grieving, is difficult, Larry, isn't it?
You can't do it. Like, we're all still grieving. We had his anniversary mass on Sunday in Ryn Mawr. And of the guys that were on that post, only a few turn up. The others can't deal with it.
Yeah.
One of the guys, I actually had to, he cried on my shoulder, and I brought him into the barracks for the first time in 10 years.
Yeah.
And all of these guys, they were only
young,
18, 19 years old,
yeah.
on their first tour of duty. They left the army shortly afterwards. A lot of them suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Now,
and, they've never got over it.
Okay, let me bring in Seamus. Seamus, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Seamus, how did you know the late Billy Keegan?
Well, I suppose I got first know Billy on the 30th December, 96. We both joined the army, the same for Coop Platoon, in Custom Barracks in Athlone. Billy was a good guy. We deployed overseas together with the 82nd Infantry Battalion into UNIFIL operations in South Lebanon. I suppose the only difference between me and Billy is I'm here to tell the story and he's not. Our career paths would have been mirrored, I suppose, all the way up along. I retired Sergeant Major and Billy lost his life within 2 years of joining the army. And I suppose what we're looking at here today, and I'll just double down on what Larry has spoken about there, current chiefs of staff, and no disrespect to them, get a Distinguished Service Medal for reporting to work every morning. And yet a man who gave his life for his country and his comrades and international peace is being denied this right of a military medal for gallantry, which is a step above the Distinguished Service Medal. Now, a lot of your listeners, Joe, would have... over the lifetime, would have seen war films like Save a Private Ryan, Band of Thunders, and all that. I would have seen, like, on the US side of it, guys jumping on grenades and taking the explosions to save the comrades. But what Billy Keegan had done that night, in the early hours that morning, was not dissimilar.
Okay.
And yet, his heroism has been completely ignored. And I'm sure there's Gardaí on the line today listening to it as well. And rightly so. They get their Scots Medal for bravery, and rightly so. But the Defence Forces, and especially the junior leadership and the junior ranks of the Defence Forces, is being totally ignored for their heroism, and especially under fire.
Now, the Army say the rule is between the application, or the nomination, I suppose, a better word, has to be made with between 2 and 4 years, and that's in army law, basically.
Well, it's an administrative instruction, okay, which can be changed by the direction of the Army and signed off by the minister. Okay, so if the current Minister for Defence, Micheál Martin, isn't happy with the EA regulations, or Defence Corps isn't happy with the EA regulations, it's now time to change them and recognise heroism that was, we say, in the past tense, over the last number of years, all the way back to those individuals in the Congo who were denied. Like, most people would have seen Jadavid or read about Jadavid, and that's another example of people being denied.
And then it's worth remembering Seamus and Larry and Gerry, particularly I'm addressing yourself and Larry, because you gave the state service. Every time, and rightly so, every time a role in the world is mentioned, it happened less than an hour ago on the 1 o'clock news when the Taoiseach Micheál Martin was being interviewed by Brian. And he talked about a role in the world. What country did he mention? The Lebanon. Our great peacekeeping work in the Lebanon. Now, here is a story I think a lot of people would not have been aware of until today, on this, the 24th anniversary of Billy's tragic death, wearing the Irish uniform. Hadn't been wearing it for long. He was so young, 21 years of age. Everyone attests, nobody contests, everyone attests to the fact that he acted extraordinarily heroically, and that even though he wasn't in a leadership position nominally that day, he wasn't even on duty, but he got up, realised the import of the awful situation, and got everyone to safety in the bunker. So,
but yeah, the only thing I
go ahead, yeah, who's coming in there? Larry,
Jerry here, Joe. Sorry, Joe. The only thing is what we're trying to do here, Joe, and kind of the bottom line of what it was. Next year, Billy Keegan is 25 years dead. So this was, we are doing a memorial, as Larry said there, outside Ballyhons. And what we want to do next year is, you know, this day next year is on Friday, the 31st of May. We want to bring Ballyhonus in County Mayo a standstill, the County of Mayo to a standstill, like he got 25 years previous to that. We're getting full, you know, army honours or what it was at the ceremony, and we're putting a plaque up, and we'll have that done as that's a bridge, and we're naming it, and we have, like, what we're trying to do, we're trying to drive a message out there, you know, there's a lot of people that knew Billy, went to school with him, was friends, overseas, you know. We've set up a Facebook page called Friends of Private Billy Keegan. Okay. If you'd like to like or share it and give your ideas of what can be done out there. Now, as we were at the Mayo County Council 3 weeks ago, Larry Carty gave an outstanding speech. He directed, you know, the council. He took over the council meeting, which was never heard of before. You would hear a pin drop, and you see the tears coming off the councillor's eyes. No one argued, disputed it. You know, it was very, you know, touching the way that Larry drove that speech out. And that is facts of what happened to the real Billy Keegan. You know, he was that type of lad. And as everyone knew him, I knew him. You know, and I think he does deserve to get these medals. You know, as it was, what we're trying to do is, you know, we'll try and get into the Rochtus committees. We'll try and get into the Minister for Defence. These things can be got and it can be delivered. You know, and this, we will fight tooth and nail to get what Billy deserves. His family deserves that. Like, his poor mother and father there, Willie and Doris, they went to their graves there in the last 2 or 3 years. You know, the Warrantown people, you know, they didn't get the medals they deserved for their son. He has his two sisters out there. You know, he has his nieces, he has his nephews. They deserve to get recognised for what the real Billy Keegan did do. You know, now, you know, Billy, you know, he's recognised as Private Billy Keegan, and as Larry said to me there this morning, you know, he's everyone's saying he's Private Billy Keegan. He was Corporal Billy Keegan, is right title, because he was an acting corporal.
That's
you know,
true, yeah.
But you know,
yeah.
It isn't every day of the week you hear of a local young lad getting killed out in the Lebanon. You know, there's car crashes. You know, but a lad that died for his country, you know, he was a serving member. You know, he does deserve, and I'm, you know, begging and pleading with the Minister for Defence, Mioma, you know, to get some, you know, they can bend the rules. We had the thing with COVID, they bent the rules. They can bend the rules when they want to bend it. And I think it's damn time this should be done. You know, there's guy that killed in duty. You know, they should bend the rules and get this across the line for Billy, because his family does deserve this. And we will find two senators to get this across
number,
the line.
A number of our listeners are pointing out to us that in his speech, when President Joe Biden was in Mayo, in his speech in Ballina that night, about 4 weeks ago, he actually said the following: today, the United States continues to honour that legacy, including that one of a Mayo-born Marine named Patrick Gallagher. I think he was actually from Ballyhonnet.
Patrick Gallagher.
Right, very beside Billy. Patrick emigrated to New York in 1962. He worked for the Senate campaign of one of my political heroes, says Joe Biden, Robert F. Kennedy. A few years later, when he wasn't even a U.S. citizen, Patrick joined the United States Marine Corps and was deployed to Vietnam. In July of 1966, Patrick's team was attacked in an ambush. When the enemy hurled a grenade at his team, make the similarities yourself as you listen to Billy's heroism. When this is the American president talking about another son of Ballyhon, as Patrick Gallagher. When the enemy hurled a grenade at his team, Patrick threw himself on top of that grenade. He was willing to sacrifice his life to save his brothers in arms. He survived that attack on that day, but was awarded the Navy Cross for his bravery. Sadly, he was later killed in action. But this year, said Joe Biden 4 weeks ago, his name will be honoured in Ireland as the United States launches a new Navy destroyer, the USS Patrick Gallagher from Mayo. And anyone watching, as I was, so many of us was, you will remember when Joe Biden announced that there was a new Navy destroyer to be called the USS Patrick Gallagher, the crowd erupted in spontaneous applause. But there's someone else being very, very, but as Larry said earlier, he thinks other armies do remembrance better than we do. And we've a great national army. We really have Oglaig na hÉireann, the only Oglaig na hÉireann that should ever be recognised and honoured. Frank Greeley, Frank, your point, please.
My point is tear up that rule book and honour the man that answered the call. And there's a wonderful song about Patrick Gallagher, and hopefully there'll be one about Billy Keegan one of these days. Johnny B. Broderick has composed it, Sean Kane sings it, and there's a line in it that said, "Life is for living, be brave and be bold." And indeed, Billy Keegan was all of that. And we'd be honouring him tomorrow night with the song in Ballyhonus and the Dalgan tomorrow night, part of the festival down in Ballyhonus.
And you knew the family, Frank?
I knew the family. I knew his dad, and his dad was a plasterer, I believe. He's a son of Ballyhonus, a proud son of Ballyhonus that deserves a hero's honour. You know, Patrick Gallagher has been very well recognised in that field on both sides of it. There was a great celebration of Patrick in Ballyhonus a couple of years ago, and a song to commemorate. And there'd be no better man than Johnny B. Broderick to compose a song about Billy Keegan as well. I think it's something he well deserves.
Okay, well said, well said.
The only thing is there, Joe, there's a local musician there, Jerry Kearney. He actually is in the middle of writing a song for Billy for his 25th anniversary next year. You know, Jerry, big well-known songwriter who wrote the Paddy song.
That's great news. I'm delighted to hear that.
Yeah. So there'll be a lot of tributes there to Billy on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
The army have sent
George Seamus, sorry, George Seamus, sir. Could I just remember a second, if you don't mind?
Okay, yeah.
Joe, the Irish government got a seat at the UN table, okay? And that seat at the UN table is based on the commitment of Irish soldiers abroad, okay? Without that commitment, without that sacrifice, we wouldn't have a chair at the UN table. Okay, and yes, the last person to sit on is not the current Minister of Defence. He should recognise, like, he thanked the Irish Defence Forces for the contribution, but now let him stand up. I'm calling on TD Fionn Martin to actually do the right thing now.
Okay, this is a statement from the Irish. Sorry for cutting across people. This is the statement from the army. They detail the event. They say the regulations require that recommendations for the awarding of medals are made between 2 and 4 years of the incident occurring, depending on the award proposed. But all members of the Defence Forces killed in service are remembered during the National Day of Commemoration. We know that in July and in November. This month, Private Keegan was particularly remembered with a ceremony at the Irish Monument in Tibnin, Lebanon, where the current Irish Battalion commander stationed there laid a wreath in memory of Billy and the other members of the Defence Forces killed in the service of peace. We remember the family of Private Billy Keegan and all those families who have suffered the immeasurable loss of a loved one in the cause of peace. His death reminds us of the unique nature of service in the Defence Forces, which necessitates the acceptance of risk to secure peace in some of the most challenging areas of the world. But Billy gave up his life. He gave his life at such a young age.
That's coming straight from the press office, okay? That's probably written by a junior captain.
I know, it doesn't matter. The army press officers are brilliant, always have been brilliant over the years. It's they're pointing out the regulations. Now, Larry, can I ask you, are the members of Billy's family who were mentioned, are they still with us? His sisters, his mother, his father?
They were with us on Sunday at the anniversary mass, and I spoke with Mary this morning to tell her about this show. Just getting back to the medals and that press release from the Department of Defence. If you look at the Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris, he honoured 68 Gardaí recently with the Scott Medals for Bravery, and included that was Gary Sheehan.
Yeah, rightly so.
No one honoured Private Patrick Kelly, who was killed right beside him from Athlone.
And Gary, you're right. Gary was rightly honoured, but Patrick should receive. Okay, I think that stands. And I know Gary Kelly's son is a great campaigner down in Athlone, a great campaigner in the memory of his very, very brave father, who did the state not just some service but gave his life. Okay, Jerry O'Boyle, Larry Carty, Seamus, Frank Greeley, above all condolences to the two sisters and the parents of the late, and it's a cliche used too often, but you heard the story, the late great Private Billy Keegan. Contacted by a number of people about the Alzheimer's discussion we've been having over the last few days, and Rose Henderson contacted. Rose from her role, long-standing actress, her role in Father Ted. What were you in Father Ted, Rose? Unknown, wasn't it?
Sister Assumpta, Joe.
Sister Assumpta and Father Ted, and lots of RTE productions as well. But this discussion about Alzheimer's has a particular resonance for you, Rose, you point out to us.
Yeah, my dad had Alzheimer's, and unfortunately, and my mum looked after him until he died, and he got pancreatic cancer as well, but because he had Alzheimer's, he didn't remember, and he wasn't afraid. And it was really one of the blessings that Alzheimer's gave us. That he kind of didn't have any fear of that, you know. So really, just watching my mum go through that whole process of losing this very bright, intelligent man, and going into this, you know, just receding from us while he was still alive, just promoted me to. I just wanted to write about it and to just say what our experience was. And we wrote a play, Pat Nolan and myself. People would know Pat from Barry and Fair City. And,
yeah, of course, yeah.
Joseph Fatton is a terrific actor. So the two of us together made this play called Take Off Your Cornflakes, which is currently on at the Viking Theatre until the end of the week. In Clontarf. And what it does is it kind of shows the process of Alzheimer's. We've mixed up all the scenes so that it's kind of, you have to follow, we're older, we're younger. It's that kind of, gosh, is it a good day today or is it just a particularly bad day? Is it always going to be like this? And it has a lot of fun in it. My dad always remembered his bad jokes.
Okay.
And it was the saving of a lot of situations because he'd just come out with one of his terrible jokes and he loved that. And
I presume they're dad jokes, I presume, as we're
really
all accused
dad
of.
Jokes.
Yes. And how, Rose, as a question I asked people over the last few days, how did you or your father, how did he first notice that there was a difference?
Yeah, there's things that we'd call normal forgetting, like, you know, that when you get a bit older, you forget people's names or you forget, you know. But there was, at one point, he was trying to fix, he was an engineer, and he was trying to help me fix the mirror in my car, the inside of my car, and he was using a screwdriver, but the handle was trying to go into the screw, like, it was the wrong end of the screwdriver. Now, I was looking at him going, what's he doing? Like, that's completely mad. And I took it. I said, can I just look at that screwdriver? And I handed it back to him the right way. And he fixed the mirror for me. But he didn't know he'd done that.
Okay.
And I thought, now, that's not a normal forgetting thing. That's weird. You know, and we got him tested. But seriously, there are things like in the play, Pat's character, Tommy, forgets where he's left his car, which is a normal thing in a big supermarket, you know, car park. But he's looking for his old car. He's looking for the wrong car. So you kind of go, it alerts us to kind of, oh, hold on a minute now, that's not right. You know, so it's a processing thing that can happen to people with Alzheimer's that the connection is gone. So you're bringing up some, you're dredging up some memory to fix that, you know, they're really good at compensating and pretending that, no, it's everything's fine, even though it mustn't feel fine for them. So my heart went out to those girls yesterday that were speaking because, you know, the lady with Louis Boggy, and it's a place that you're in that, you know, that you can, and we're a lot, apparently there's one in four families dealing with this.
Incredible.
You know, in Ireland. So this needs a huge amount of support. And really what we tried to do in the play is to say yes to it. Actually go along with it, so that instead of saying, no, you can't go to the airport at 1 o'clock in the morning, you'd say, yeah, okay, let's go to New York. And when you're getting up, you might have got as far as the kitchen and you'd say, but will we have a cup of tea first?
Yeah, great, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it just distress on the moment is gone, so that, you know, you're not going to let the person get into danger. But actually, there's things where he says, let's go outside in our clothes, like in our clothes in the rain and get soaked.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, well, yeah, Why don't we do that? Because that'd be mad. You know what I mean? It'd be, you know, but like that you actually, with a person with Alzheimer's, you don't ask a question if the answer isn't in the room.
And he's still, I know in your communication with us, you say that he loved his memory. When it was gone, he became so frustrated. But also that, and you mentioned pancreatic cancer, and he didn't actually know because he didn't know he had it. So he didn't have that worry. But you say he escaped from respite care. How did he do that?
You see, he's an engineer. So he's the buzzer goes when he goes out the door. And he's going, why does that buzzer? It's a very annoying sound every time I walk through the door.
Yeah.
So he's sitting looking at the door and he notices that there's a laser beam going from one side to the other.
Okay.
And he goes, I bet you I'm breaking the laser beam. He tries it with his leg.
Okay.
The buzzer goes. And he goes, I could just flip and climb over that.
Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible, didn't he? Limbo dance under a laser beam.
So like there are funny things that happen with persons. So you have to find, and we're great at that as Irish people, at looking at the funny things, you know what I mean? And it does rescue us from a lot of very tragic situations. And, you know, that's what this play is trying to do. It's trying to say, look, actually go with it and say, you know, instead of trying to drag him back, who cares? Is it Monday or Tuesday? It doesn't actually matter.
But what is
you know?
It,
it's well, only
two things, Rose. One, what's the reaction of the audience? Because to do a play, about Alzheimer's is it one difficult? It's not a musical or a comedy in that sense. And I know there's humour in it, but is it a hard sell for a start?
Yeah, well, we thought it would be much more. We actually thought, really, we better not put the word Alzheimer's in the title, for example. So it's okay. Called Take Off Your Cornflakes, which is the kind of thing that a person with Alzheimer's might say, because they've just got the wrong word.
Okay, yeah,
they
exactly,
might mean glasses, they might mean take off your jumper. It's just the wrong word. And that's what we're saying. Yes, it can be a hard sell. But only, I mean, this week we're there and we're talking to people afterwards and the stories we're getting from people. With a lady who's saying, my husband is going through this right at the moment. And I'm saying to her, so was it a hard thing to watch? And she said, you know what? I felt seen.
Okay.
You know, which is gorgeous. Yeah. And people, we toured this before COVID and we had people queuing up for hugs. You know, and I just think that's gorgeous because really the carer is the one who needs the care. The person with Alzheimer's is going through it and actually escapes from the worry. Dad said to me, you know, I'm sure there's things I should be worrying about. I can't remember what they are. And he trusted us to do all those things and he knew that we would. But wasn't that lovely? Isn't that a nice place to be in a place where you've no worries because...
Yeah,
they're not facing it, you know.
But on the one hand, is it a hard sell? Is it hard to do, Rose, for you?
Oh, sure. We're both brilliant, so it's not hard.
I know that. But emotionally.
Yes. And we've lots of short scenes. So the scenes go from, you might have one where the Queen comes to Ireland. You might have one where they're young and she's pregnant and expecting the first child. You might have one where they're trying to just get his coat on because he won't put the coat on, he's taking it off. You know, we've lots of different scenes. So the difficulty with this play is remembering what scene is next. Because they're all mixed up. So for Pat, who is the one who forgets everything, he has to have a tiny percentage of his brain remembering what the link is to the next scene. So that was the really technical difficulty. A few scenes are very emotional and you have to kind of very quickly dredge that emotion straight up now. And then it's gone. Okay. And that's the technical difficulty. But other than that, actually the rest of the audience are in that as well. And they're crying 1 minute and they're roaring laughing the next. And it's about the balance. And we had a wonderful director, Liam Halligan, making sure we had the balance right.
Okay, so, and as you mentioned earlier, one in four families at any one time have a connection with dementia, stroke, Alzheimer's. And I know it is next week in the Viking Theatre in Dare and Clontarf. Brian Murray, who's spoken a lot about his own onset of dementia and his wife, as you know, Una Crawford O'Brien, and we know them all.
Yeah. Like,
we know you and Pat from your RT work. They're performing love letters in the Viking Theatre.
Because for years we didn't bring these things to attention because we thought it was too hard. But actually, I think there has been a change since COVID. Like, I didn't bring this play out after COVID because I thought it's too sad. But actually now doing it, we're aware of sadness, but we want to face it. I think we're more able to face it. There's a kind of a maturity has happened that we're more able to look into it and just say, now let me touch that and look at it. And it becomes less fearful when you look at a thing straight on.
Okay. Rose, before I go, I want to mention your other, the last time I saw you perform was in Toy Show the Musical.
Yeah.
And you had a major part in it. But from another angle, what was it like, Rose? And even 2 days ago in the Irish Independent, having another go at Toy Show the Musical, what was it like for the performers when we deluged?
We had a beautiful show.
Yeah.
It was a gorgeous piece with a lot of children, young kids. We had 32 children with three teams of kids and one set of adults. So we were in the adults were in every show.
Yeah.
We had to really protect the kids from that. It was very, very few reviews of the show itself. And the Irish Times blasted the show for being there. But they also had a little sentence saying, the show itself is beautiful.
Yeah.
but why are RTE doing it? So really, RTE employed a lot of people over Christmas that would not have been employed. And it was a gorgeous piece. And I just think, you know, it was an awful shame. But the people who came loved it. So that's,
you know, and I see a piece yesterday in the Irish Independent by a journalist I like over the years, Kirsty Blake Knock, and she's Knox, and she says musical theatre is a crapshoot. So who knows why RT decided during the midst of a global pandemic, tightening budget, a time when theatre was going to one of the most, it was an ideal time. She says investor reported $2 million in the station's first musical, and she was saying that this was the opening line. There's a restaurant in New York where the only posters on the wall are for flops, for theatrical flops. Okay, and basically she's saying the toy show, the musical, should be on that wall. Now,
did she see it? I wonder.
Yeah, she does, because she goes into, at one stage she goes into the plot focus on two children who lost their mother and wanted to remember. Here we go. So, but anyway, do you think the media, the print media especially, were too hard on Toy Show the Musical?
Well, look, as a critics performer. Critics have a job to criticise, and that's their job. But sometimes they don't, you know, they're you know, so it's an opinion. Sometimes, you know, that show was a new Irish musical. Mm-hmm. So how many of those are there? It was, the music was written from scratch, the script, the characters, everything, all the choreography was done from scratch. There was nothing to follow. So it's not like bringing in a musical that's been done somewhere else that we follow the route. We didn't know what would happen. So it's a very, you know, so from that basis, I think possibly the theatre was too big. We were in the convention centre. It was too big a space. But, like, that's okay. That's, mistakes can be made. And we got COVID. So the cast got COVID. What can you do with that?
But Kirsty Blake Knox says, and I say this is the Indo 2 days ago, 6 months after it. It comes, and I'm just, there's a photograph, I think it's yourself actually, with the group of kids, and I feel awful for the children, because they were all brilliant.
Because, and especially the three main stars who carried that
brilliant
show,
singers.
Brilliant singers.
But this is what the Independent said yesterday. When RT bosses watched previews and saw poor ticket sales, they should have done what the producers of the flops on the wall of Joe Allen's restaurant did. They should have pulled it early on. Was that ever a conversation that seasoned actors like yourself would have had when it was on, Rose?
No, because we were loving it. We were having the best fun, and the audiences were having the best fun. And you know, there's often you'll be criticised for something that's awful or it's done badly. This was done very well. And it was like all of the actors were, you know, like Anna Healy was, she's been got an IFTA for best actress. Like, they weren't rubbish people were involved.
No, there was no naff acting in it.
You know what I mean?
It was
all terrifically well done. So, you know, you can have your opinion, but musical theatre isn't, we don't have a big, we have a huge amateur focus on musical theatre who absolutely adore it. We don't have a huge tradition of professional musical theatre in this country. Now, you know, it's just not, I don't know why, because we sing and we dance and we act, you know, so that's what it is.
And the Independent finishes, there's still a lot of questions unanswered. Who signed off on Toy Show the Musical? Why didn't they hire industry experts with years of experience producing musical theatre in Ireland? Why did they pick such a huge venue? I know you did. This is not a small blip in the Toy Show history, but a total fiasco. And RTE should not be allowed to sweep that under the carpet. Well, RTE aren't, as far as I know, Kirsty. Yeah, and the fact that you wrote about it yesterday and we're reading it out today says something. But I just think, to say the least, I don't know what you think, Rose, but I think some of the treatment of Toy Show the Musical was very, very unfair.
I just think if you don't try new things, then you'll never get new things. If it was a huge success, they'd all be lauding it and saying what a wonderful idea and well done, RTE. Do you know what I mean? I just think often new shows take time. The music is new, you haven't heard it before. It's like if you've heard
Rose, if the Toy Show the Musical was a huge, and it was a success to some people. I know the difficulties. It was tried and it didn't get to the heights it hoped. But if it had been a success, The same newspapers would be writing editorials yesterday saying, what are RTE doing with the money that they made out of Toy Show the Musical?
Exactly.
It's time to soften their cough. Rose, I love you. You're on until Saturday night with Pat in the Viking Theatre in the Sheds in Clontarf.
And we'd love to see you. And wait afterwards and tell us your story.
Yeah, and Brian and Una are on there next week. Good to meet you, Margaret. That's Rose Henderson. Joe with our star of the Toy Show the Musical.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Mick Yates. Michael, good afternoon.
How's it going, Joe?
You want to talk about your father. Tell us about your dad and his role in the Irish Army.
Yeah, well, my dad was, it's actually today's 43 years dead today.
Oh, is he?
He was killed over in Lebanon. He was over there about 28 days.
Okay.
And yeah, so I was 14, I had two younger siblings, and yeah, it's just a tough one when something like that comes and knocks on your door, you know.
And what happened to your father?
He was in a motor accident over there. I've been led to believe I was much younger when it happened. I was 14, so obviously I believe there was a bit of there was an incident over there, and when they went out to investigate. As far as I know, a missile hit underneath the road where they were travelling. He was in one of these people carrier kind of things.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing overturned. He was the guy that sat on the top.
Okay.
And just unfortunately, obviously the release button to drop the seat down didn't go down quick enough, and he was killed with the tumbling of the armoured
vehicle. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And what age was your dad?
42.
And it happened. He's now dead longer than he lived. He's 43 years dead today.
Yeah,
my God, my God. And your mother, what help did she get, Mick? Such a young family.
I was the youngest of three, I was a bit young to know what had happened.
Yeah,
but like it was yesterday, I remember going to the Dublin airport and his remains arriving and stuff like that. So that was tough and everything. But she found it very hard because she was just left with a young family.
Did she get any, sorry for asking this question, but did she get any pension or financial compensation?
Well, she would have got the army pension, yeah. She would have got the army pension. But I will say that the army community, like the vets, They're amazing. On Thursday week, on the 8th, I'm going to present a set of medals to them for in Iumva 1 in Arbor Hill there.
Okay.
And they're going to put in a kind of museum there.
That's brilliant. Nice. Yeah, I know.
But unfortunately, the only thing unfortunate is that my dad was never awarded a medal for his service in the Lebanon.
Okay, well, tell us about that. Did you ask?
Well, as far as I know, my mother was always upset over it, but I've been led to believe that the answer was he wasn't over in the Lebanon long enough to
That couldn't be an answer, Mick. You know, I agree.
That's what I've been led to believe, because my mother was always upset that she actually never saw. So I have a set of medals at home, and I used to get a replica Lebanon medal done for my own. Yeah,
Got it done yourself.
Yeah. We were never presented with a medal, officially presented with a medal from my dad for his service, and he'd been in the Congo couple of times and Cyprus. So yeah, my grandfather would have served in the army as well when he from young as well.
And was there ever talk of a medal? Because we know with Billy Keegan earlier on there, who was also killed today. This is his anniversary today. That just shows you, Mick, and those listening, on this day, this random day in the random world we live in, we've had two calls about two Irish soldiers who were killed in action on this day. Never met each other, Billy and Ted, but that shows you the sacrifice that was made. I know Billy's family and friends, as you know, have a campaign. Is there a campaign at your end, Mick?
Not that I know of, but yeah. I will say, there is a a remembrance service on Sunday the 11th on Arbor Hill.
Okay.
And like, I meet so many guys over there that have such warm and good memories of my dad.
Okay.
And it's amazing to kind of catch up with them. And like, I've been to Lebanon twice with the guys, and I've actually visited where he, the place where he actually was killed.
Yeah.
As well.
He would have been 85 years of age. And is your mother still with us, Mick?
No, she passed away in 2018.
Oh, God. So recently.
Yeah, but I always remember that was a bone of contention with her dad.
Okay.
She was never presented a medal for his service in Lebanon.
Okay, well, thank you for remembering, and onwards with the campaign, the late Sergeant Edward Ted Yates of Ogleignahare. And Joe at RTE.ie. Thanks, Mick. And today's programme was produced by Dave Sherry, Mark Dwyer, and sound the BCO's Michelle Gibson. And Ray Darcy is next.